Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 275. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically VersaPulley, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and they have both great people and a fantastic product. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, please let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Zach Dakin. He's the Senior Assistant Director of Strength and Conditioning at TCU. He's been there, 10 or 11 years now, I think, working mostly with baseball. He's working with quarterbacks, works with professional baseball players consistently. And that's where I know him most, from the articles that he's written and the resources that he's put out in that regard. So, man, excited to get you on the show and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Been a big fan for a long time, and I really want to say thank you for what you've done to the field, for what you've done for the field.
Appreciate that.
We greatly appreciate it. Young strength coaches, we greatly appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks, man. No, it means a lot. It means more than you know. Well, you've been, like I said, at TCU, I think 11 years now, right?
Yes, going on. Starting 11, I believe, right now.
Yeah, so it's notable in and of itself. But you also, before that, you were with the Anaheim Angels. You were with Wyoming, Missouri State, University of Washington. I usually ask the question, which one of those stops kind of best defines you as a strength coach? But you being at TCU this long, I would imagine it's probably the case. What lesson do you feel like you learned the most in your time at TCU that's really kind of shaped who you are?
I mean, we could make an entire episode out of that, but to be honest, when I first got here as a young strength coach, it was, I hate to say this, but you kind of become bitter and you kind of become jaded as a strength coach sometimes, because you see sport coaches, honestly, they're making a lot of money. Strength coaches have as much influence, in my opinion, as anybody in the entire department, right? You spend more time with the athletes than any coach in any sport anywhere.
Right.
I felt like we didn't get respected a lot of times. And I felt just bitter towards the field and towards other coaches in how they viewed our position. The biggest thing I've learned here, and honestly, the head coach approached me with this one time, and he kind of got in my ass, to be honest about it. And from then forward, I kind of changed my approach on my outlook of how I wanted to approach my sports, my teams. I'm not the most happy-go-lucky guy in the room, but I have a completely different outlook of how I want to help my sports and work together with the sport coaches, especially. We as strength coaches have trouble sometimes. A sport coach wants to do something and you might not agree with it. We all know the problem with running multiple miles for conditioning tests and things like that with sports that are very alactic or whatever. But right. it was breaking down that barrier of being bitter and having it out towards everybody else, because we were kind of low paid sometimes and underappreciated, and just trying to help develop my team, communicate with the coaches, and honestly build a bigger brand so they appreciated what we actually do for them.
Great. I would think that's excellent advice. And you're always bigger outside of your zip code, and so if you can build somewhat of a brand, a lot of times those coaches will jump on that. Your athletes will jump on that and they'll be excited about it, as opposed to you're just another face that's in the weight room this year. So I agree with that. You've ran an internship program for quite some time as well. What's one of the biggest mistakes that you see young coaches make in the profession?
Again, we could go on this a long time, but A lot of it is just, you know, it's not understanding that they don't know it all yet, right? And I made this mistake. We all make this mistake. When you first get into the field, you're not skilled, but you think you know it all, right?
Right.
And then as time passes by and you start learning things, you realize you really don't know anything. And then as you become an expert in the field, you look back and all the stuff that you've learned, you realize that you didn't know anything. You had no idea what you were doing at first. And that's one of the things with interns is that they come in and you know, sometimes they're very hesitant to learn because they think they already know it all.
Right.
That might be one of the big, and then learning how to coach, you know, learning how to coach on the floor. It's easy to teach kids to write programs. It's easy to teach kids how to, do stuff on paper and theory and all this, but actually coaching and gaining a repertoire with the athletes, that's where some of the difficulty really comes in for some of these kids.
Yeah. That's really the job. The X's and O's is the easy part. The hard part is getting them to buy into you, buy into the program, show up with the right culture each day. That's the tough part.
Yeah, exactly.
You speak pretty regularly on a couple of topics, but one of which is the foundation program that you have for incoming athletes. You know, what makes your foundation program unique, or maybe a little bit different than what some other schools might be doing?
Well, for us, what it is every one of our developmental athletes. So that's all of our incoming junior college, freshmen. Every one of our athletes goes into this developmental program. It's our foundation program. And we're teaching them the basic movements that we need them to learn to be competent in, to be a successful athlete, not only in the weight room, but on the field. So it's based around our big five patterns. Our number one pattern is a squat pattern. Number two, a hip hinge. You know, we've got an upper body pull and a push. And then a stability core, you know, front and back side, lateral. It's built around those five big patterns. And then outside of that, we're focused on athletic positions, you know, deceleration positions as far as jumping's concerned, as far as sprinting's concerned, arm drive, little things like that. It's built around the basics, right? We're trying to build that foundation so that we can advance them throughout their career, because so many of these kids have never been taught the basics.
Right.
Coaches want to load them before they ever teach them how to hip hinge correctly or do this advanced jump training or advanced sprint stuff where they've never taught correct arm drive before. You know, teaching an athlete to throw his hand down and back or drive your elbows back, or teaching proper, you know, just athletic positions of landing and absorbing force. We take for granted that these have been taught before they get here.
Right.
So we eliminated that, and every one of our athletes starts off in that program, whether they're a junior college kid, an incoming freshman. I've got junior high kids that I train at a facility that go through the exact same program. It might be on a different scale, but it's the exact same thing, teaching them basic foundational movement so that they can control their body and we can advance them, you know, when the time is right. We want our movement to be dictated by the we want our weight to be dictated by the movement, not the other way around. Too many programs are worried about numbers and weight, where the weight becomes, you know, it dictates your movement. At 50% on a front squat, it looks different than at 70, 80, and 90%, right? Begin to break down. We want 50% to look the exact same as 90% to look the exact same as 50%. I got backwards there. You know, we want those heavy weights to look just like a 50% weight. Everything becomes very standard. Everything, you know, movement becomes very efficient.
You know, when you get those junior college players and at TCU, I mean, you're getting guys that are going to go. They're going to go on into the league. I mean, they're very talented athletes. How do you maintain their mindset to be willing to open themselves up to learning the basics when they're used to trying to push the envelope or do a more advanced training, those sorts of things?
Well, I mean, a lot of that I owe just to the culture of the program. From day one, and this is what's kept me here for 11 years, I'll be honest. It's our head coach and the culture that he provides me and our entire team, in that there's no other way, right? You're going to buy into the program or you're not going to be in the program.
Right.
So we get kids to buy in. I don't know how to explain it. It's just our culture, and it's very, very easy. And you know, culture is kind of a difficult thing to explain, but we get those kids to buy in from day one. And if it doesn't happen, then it's very obvious. And coach will will let you know that you're probably not going to be around for it. So that foundation program for us lasts anywhere from, you know, 8 to 12 weeks, basically 4 weeks in the summer. And then we bring them in and work on another 4+ weeks, kind of depending on how our spring schedule works out. But we've really never had too much of a problem with the buy-in. We progress them as they're competent. So, sure, you know, a kid's not going to stay in the program that can already squat really well. You know, I've got a freshman that actually front squatted 308 for sets of 5 the other day. We let him do that. But we also have a kid in the program that's working on a, you know, 88 pound front squat for sets of 5 at the same time. Right. So we let them progress as they're competent. It's not a one size fits all program. There's very much, you know, very much individualization within that. But we've really never had a problem with the buy-in.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing that I don't want people to miss is if you want to have a sustainable career, an 11-year career at a place, a lot of times it's not just about picking the place, but it's about picking the right head coach, the right, you know, the identifying the culture. Like you said at the beginning, I mean, you're not a happy-go-lucky guy. I would imagine that your head coach is probably not a happy-go-lucky guy. And so that you identify that in each other, and that's why it's worked. But if you were a happy-go-lucky guy and he's a hard ass, you know, there's probably going to be some different opinions. And I think so many times as coaches, we get captivated by the logo or the potential school or resources or whatever. And we're not looking at, like, who are we going to be working, you know, the people, who are we working with each and every day. And I think that's every bit as important as the 5 movement patterns or the athletic position or whatever when you really come down to it.
Yeah, you're right on. I mean, that might be the biggest piece of advice for young strength coaches is matching your skill set up with a coach that's going to have the same culture. Because I'll be honest, I came in, I'm a disciplinarian. I like order. I like structure. You know, we're a little bit, you know, like a military-style training concept or culture here. So he was the exact same thing. He wanted the exact same thing in that. And if we clashed on that, where, you know, if we're doing discipline-type stuff and he doesn't agree with it, that it destroys the entire foundation of what we're trying to accomplish over here, in my opinion. That's a great piece of advice for coaches.
You mentioned, you know too many coaches, too many athletes are worried about the weight, and the weight drives everything. The max, you know, max strength, and max strength is everything. And, you know, the general adage is, you know, strength kind of fixes everything. You know, it fixes speed, it fixes power production, fixes hypertrophy, whatever. Talk a little bit about why you need to be focused first on movement and then on weight.
Well, yeah, this is what we see a lot of, I guess. You got a kid at, like I said earlier, 50% as he climbs up in weight, movement starts to break down. We don't want to have that kid 2 years down the road that can't front squat 80 or 90% because he starts to shift forward with his knees. Now he can't get parallel. Now he's taking on an entirely different pattern outside of like a posterior shift with a squat. We don't want to have to restart that kid. If we take care of these problems up front, we don't have these problems down the road. So my example is always Matt Carpenter, right? He's an MLB All-Star. We started him in a foundation program, and now he's advanced to the point where we use, you know, highly advanced training techniques with some of these pro guys like himself. We couldn't do that if I didn't teach these guys how to move correctly in the first place, right? VBT, an excellent, you know, it's talked about all the time right now.
Right.
I think that's one of the most advanced training means that you can use. I can't take a kid and put him under a barbell with load and have him do it as fast as possible if he can't move correctly in the first place. Why on earth would I ever do that?
Right.
So, you know, we want the kids to move correctly first is really what it's about. Max strength is important. We'll get up there, but we're going to let your movement dictate that weight first.
Yeah, I think I absolutely 100% agree with what you're saying. I think to do that well, to sell it, you have to be able to define how strong is strong enough, you know, for your sport,
right,
position, for your athlete, whatever it is. Have you done any work into determining standards of strength?
So that's, I mean, it's a topic that I've talked a lot on Twitter about and visited with a lot of coaches about. And everybody wants to know where the line is, right? What's your front squat number? What's the deadlift number? How much do we use? What percentage of body weight? What, you know, whatever, what ratio? There is no line, in my opinion. And this is, I know it's vague and it's the line is gray, right? There's no line. You know it when you see it, yeah. In my opinion, as a coach, you know it when you see it, you know? Guys that keep crushing heavy weight continually, we're using adaptation energy to build, you know, a guy from a 400 pound squat to a 450 when we could use that adaptation energy in some other aspect of his game to make him better. Right. Yeah. At some point, maximal strength is no longer needed, right? Banging your head against the wall continually is not going to help them on the field. And I saw when I was a player, I thought maximal strength was the only way. So, you know, 550, let's go up to 600. 600, let's go up to 650. The entire time, 40s are getting slower. Vertical jumps are going down. But I thought, well, let's just get stronger. That'll take care of it. I didn't realize as a young coach and honestly as an athlete that was the case. But now you kind of know it when you see it, in my opinion. And so I can tell when an athlete has hit a number that we don't need to train maximal strength anymore. We're going to transition over into more advanced training means, whether, you know, we might use some triphasic things and a French contrast in there. We might go into velocity-based development or velocity-based training, but we will advance them after they hit that point.
Yeah, I heard one of the things that Pat Ivey and Ryan Mann and those guys did at Missouri that I really liked was, you know, they had set some standards, and I agree with you. You see it, you know it as a coach. But there is some help to be able to define it so the players know and the coaches know and all those types of things. But one of the things they did is they set standards, whatever it is, say 1.5 times body weight for back squat or whatever it may be. And once their athletes were able to reach that, then they set a weight. And that became their weight. That now it was all velocity based, training based. How fast could you move that weight? You know, right. And those set a new set of PRs. And usually, you know, their first 2 years was spent kind of coming to that ratio, and then their back 2 years was spent trying to accelerate that. And oftentimes, people would get stronger because you're learning how to move the bar faster and all those types of things. But I like the fact that, you know, there's no reason to put 600 pounds on a kid's spine, you know, at really, especially if they're a high level athlete. And there's a tremendous amount of risk reward that comes with training, because all training is detrimental, is stress on the body. So I agree with that 100%. Go ahead, yeah.
No, I was just gonna say, you know, I actually love what they do. I went to school with Brian, so we went to Missouri State together actually, so I'm close with Brian. And I love what they do, putting numbers on it. The reason I don't really put numbers on it is because, you know, you might have a kid in baseball. We might have a kid be in the program 3 years, right? You might have a program be in the program for 5 years. They might not reach that number in 5 years, but I can tell at some point, doing more maximal strength work, you know, it isn't the answer. That we have to be able to transfer something to the field. And so that's where we'll actually get into a little bit of some of Bondarchuk's principles as far as skill development and transfer, and stop worrying about, I guess, weight so much. But, yeah. You know, it's hard for me to put numbers on it is really, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I definitely. You talked a little bit about your internship program, and you've been running, I think, like I said, 11 years, 30-something, you know, classes. Running an internship program was something that I've done for a long time and you know, put a lot of effort and time into it. For coaches that are listening that are maybe their internship coordinator, maybe they're, you know, wanting to run an internship program, what's a couple of key things for success of that program?
Well, to me, I think it's building a curriculum around it, right? I didn't want kids to come in here and clean the weight room, you know, that be their only job, picking up towels, cleaning the weight room, stocking the muscle milk. That's not how you develop a coach. So for us, it was developing a curriculum around that so that they can actually learn. So we can send out competent coaches into the field of strength and conditioning instead of sending out a guy that knows how to mop and sweep, because it doesn't help our field if these kids have no idea how to coach, have no idea, you know, what they're doing, what periodization is, any of these concepts that are essential to our position. So that would be my biggest advice, is teach these kids. And we give these kids a ton of responsibility. I'll be honest. We want kids to come in here and be able to coach from day one. All right. Even if you can't coach, we're going to throw you into the fire and you're going to learn how to coach, because right. that's the only way it's going to happen. But yeah, that would be my biggest piece of advice, is try to develop coaches.
Yeah, I think, I mean, curriculum and developing coaches is absolutely the most important part. I think, so many times, I remember sitting out of, going and visiting a strength coach, 20 years ago, and walking into the facility a little bit late because I'd gotten there late because of my flight or whatever. And all four interns were sitting in the hallway while the group was lifting, and they were waiting to go in to stock the fridge for Gatorades. And I was like, that's going to be crazy. It's going to be the worst internship ever.
I would say your horror stories just like that all the time.
Investing in your interns, be it curriculum, be it in helping them get jobs, be it in after they leave. To me, that's the most important. Those are the most important parts of having success, because they're going to recruit themselves at that point. If you help people move on and they're developed and ready to go, they're gonna help you find interns later on. Flip that though, there's a big movement out there right now that's like, we shouldn't have internships, and if we did have them, they should be paid, internships and all that. Where do you sit with the value of an internship?
I mean, it's hard for me. I'm on the fence about that. To me, it's just part of the process of being a strength coach, because you really weed out who wants to be a strength coach and who doesn't. And it's not for everybody, we talk about kids that want to be strength coaches from the area a lot, in the DFW area, that don't want to sacrifice anything. Being a coach, it's going to take sacrifice. This job is not for everybody. And really, it's for us, it's not a job, because I love coming to work every day. I love working with athletes. I love what we do. I love everything about what we do as strength and conditioning coaches. And to me, it's just not a job. So if you want that in your life, you're going to have to make sacrifices along the way. Yeah, I wish we could pay everybody. But when you start paying everybody, I think it's tough to weed out some of the guys that really want it. And like I said, we have trouble sometimes hiring guys from DFW area because they're not ready to sacrifice. They want something that's easy, that's right around the street, it's not going to take sacrifice. That's why I love hiring interns from outside of our area, because they're showing me that they're willing to sacrifice and make the commitment for something that is going to be strenuous on them, right? Right. So when we look for interns, we specifically look outside of our area, to be honest.
Yeah, that was a critical piece for us as well, because if you're going to move down there, you're not going to quit at the first bump in the road, you made a tremendous sacrifice to come down. But at the end of the day, I think, again, for those young coaches that are listening, if the program does what TCU does and invests in you with a curriculum and assistance with your development and helps you pass, the semester in your career, that's a value that you got to put that's a service that you need to put a value on, and that's where, you are getting paid. You might not be getting monetarily paid, but you are getting invested in. Right. And that's what I think these coaches that are on the podiums that are pounding the gavel saying we need to be paying everybody. Shoot, man, it'd be awesome if we could pay everybody. But there's a minimal amount of jobs.
Yeah.
That's highly competitive, and the way that you separate yourself is by gaining experience. And the only way to do that is to find opportunities. And it's on the onus of the coach to find opportunities where they feel like they're gaining that type of value.
Right.
And then it's on us too to provide a service that is valuable. And I know you guys are doing that. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
You know, my favorite, honestly, my favorite quote or my favorite quote is, "You're either coaching it or allowing it." Right? If it's happening in your weight room, you're either coaching it or allowing it. If somebody's not squatting where you want them to squat or doing something that you don't want to happen, you're basically allowing it. Right? So coach it or allow it. It's one of those two things.
Yeah, great, great piece. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Yeah, my favorite book, and this goes, you know, the book that changed me the most was Stuart McGill's Back Performance and Fitness, I believe. It's Low Back Performance and Fitness, something like that.
Yep.
It changed my outlook on everything that I knew up to that point as a strength coach. I developed a lot of the principles in that foundation program. I developed those around some of what Stuart McGill talks about with the spine and the hips and the core. And you know, it changed my entire outlook on my philosophy. App has got to be a camera. The camera to me is valuable in that, especially in baseball with a lot of skill development stuff, looking at movement patterns and things like that, we slow stuff down and use the, whatever it is, the slow motion filter a ton. The camera is the number one thing for me. And not only that, but I use it in the weight room a lot to show athletes what they're doing wrong. Because if they can't see themselves, that's one way to coach, is having an athlete look at what they're doing wrong, and then the light bulb goes off. Instead of me trying to talk him through it or giving cues, I say, hey, look, you know, you're not getting back to your heels, you're not driving this right knee out, whatever the case is. And I can show them instantly, and they say, oh, okay, yeah, I didn't realize I was doing that. So the camera's that for me. And then website, you know what I love right now is Altus's website. I think Altus has a ton of information. I think they're doing great things, putting out information for young strength coaches. It's altus.world, I believe. But Stuart McGill and Dan Paff and those guys out there, I think, are doing a tremendous job. Honestly, kind of along the same lines that Al did when he was with the Chicago Bulls. You know, he would bring Charlie Francis in. He would bring just names from everywhere in the world in to learn from him. And That's a little bit of what Altus doing with their, you know, their whatever programs they have every couple of months out there, where they bring, you know, strength coaches in and different guys in to present to coaches, therapists, everything.
Yeah, no, they do a fantastic job. Well, man, like I said at the beginning, I really appreciate the way that you approach your work. I think it's, you know, you've done being in one place for 11 years speak volumes about who you are as a person, as well as a coach, that you're invested in the athletes first and foremost. And that's evident by, you know, putting together things like the foundation program and stressing movement, and your their health is your primary concern. And then to turn around and to work in a competitive landscape like, you know, strength and conditioning, and be there for 11 years, that means that you're able to work with your peers and your administration and speak volumes as well. So I just appreciate who you are, how you do it, and coming on the show, man.
Hey, if you had asked me 11 years ago if I thought I'd be here more than two or three, I would have said no chance, right? But it sucks you in, and it's been a blessing. And I appreciate you having me on. It was really, really an honor. So thank you for everything.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.